Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast for the fans by the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks Superfan. We're going to be talking Combine today. Got a great crew with me. One of your old favorites, Nick, with his dulcet tones, is back. Nick, let's hear that voice.
Here is that voice.
Nice. Too sexy. You might have to filter that out. Up next, we have Neil, all the way from Scotland. What's happening, Neil?
I've just finished doing 500 reps on the bench press at 25 pounds, Justin. 225 pounds.
That will surely improve your draft stock. And finally, from Prison Zone 6, Kevin, how's it going?
Well, I've been working my bench press a while here in Prison Zone 6, so I'd like to think mine's better than Neil's.
All right, guys. So as I said, we're going to be talking Combine. First, we'll talk a little bit of news. But the big story this week, obviously, is everybody is gathering up to see what is basically the underwear Olympics of a bunch of college kids, which is about as weird as it sounds. Before we dive into that, though, Neil, catch us up on the news of the past couple of days.
Thanks, Justin. Just a few items, really, this week. As you said, it's Combine week, and everything's been focused there. If I can just give a few highlights from the Combine, which I'm sure we'll pick up on later. We had the 40-yard dash record broken, and I'm sure we'll speak about that. We had Reuben Foster, the Alabama linebacker. Oh, dear, naughty boy. Had a bit of a spat and was sent home, and that's pretty hard to do at the Combine. And, of course, we saw Leonard Fournette, who, like most of us, Justin, suffers from additional water weight. Jay Gruden, in other news, he signed a 2-year extension with Washington, which is terrific news, I think, for the organization to get a bit of stability. And hey, about this, Justin, how about this? Jay Gruden is the first head coach under the ownership of Dan Snyder to get an extension. And remember, Snyder's had the team since 1999. Over there in Seattle land, you have began the Blair Walsh project. In case Stephen Hauschka leaves in free agency. Then we've got the Brandon Cooks story. Brandon Cooks is on the trade block. Brandon Cooks, who allegedly has a bit of an attitude problem, wanting out of New Orleans and New England, keen to get a deal done, and perhaps Tennessee as well, and also, of course, wide receiver Needy Philly are interested there. And then we have Justin, the league's receiving leader in catches and yards, will become a free agent. He's been the leader in catches and yards over the last 10 years. Who is he, Justin?
Brandon Marshall.
Correct, Brandon Marshall. He'll be a free agent. And the question for us tonight maybe is, where's he going? In slow Newsweek special, reports were flying around of a three-team trade, which was between the 49ers, the Redskins, and the Cowboys, with the strap line here being that Romo, Kevin, was going to end up in Washington, and I think that's as much chance as it has for any of us guys getting drafted in the first round next month. Le'Veon Bell, he claims Pittsburgh would have beaten the Patriots if he had been healthy, and I think there's a serious concern there that Le'Veon Bell is back on the wacky-backy. In free agents starts this week. That starts, what, Thursday? And a big question for us all this week is, who does your team want to keep and who do they want to sign up? Huge week in free agency coming up after the end of this NFL Combine. And finally, Justin, in angry avian news, a seagull took over a supermarket in Cornwall, England last week. The angry seagull swooped into the superstore in Truro, Cornwall at around 8:30 p.m. and began harassing customers and staff. One employee said, "I was aware of its presence, and then all of a sudden, it flew into my head." The store was eventually forced to close for 75 minutes as staff attempted to apprehend the angry bird, leaving more than 50 people unable to purchase their groceries. Our thoughts and prayers go out to those customers. The gull was eventually captured and deep-fried in the deli section. No, he wasn't. He was safely released outside after taunting workers from atop a large pack of cat food. There you go, Justin. That's today, this week's news.
Bravo, Neil. As always, thank you so much for getting us only the most important piece of information in our lives at the moment. So let's throw it over to you, Nick, our resident newsman of Neil's little summary. What sticks out to you? Which pieces of news are interesting to you? What's kind of burning at the top of your head right now?
Well, as far as performances go, I am really interested to see if this is going to push the Seagull up into the maybe a day two pick. Because clearly he's got the aerial range, you know. I'm not sure how well his webbed feet would be able to hold a football, but...
His wingspan and catching radius is impressive.
I imagine so.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, other than that, you know, we were talking...
His vert is unmatchable.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure he beats everybody else in the vertical there. Probably long jump as well. But well, we were talking about, you know, like just looking at the combine, we've had a few headlines come out of this, and we're sort of split down the middle here on the pod in terms of how much we believe in the combine and the results and how meaningful they are. Obviously, I think everybody sort of agrees that the two biggest and most important phases of it are the ones that we have basically no real look into, which is the individual meetings with the teams and the medical. And the only player whose medical we know how it went was Reuben Foster, and it didn't go very well. So, you know, I guess that much we know. I have a feeling Foster is going to be dropping.
Yeah, you know what? Let's just talk about that real quick. Reuben Foster's medical didn't go well, but not for the reasons you would think. Kevin, could you tell us what happened with Reuben Foster?
I'm not sure the specifics, but the gist, I think, is he got into a heated argument with a hospital worker. I'm not sure the procedure that was being undergone at the time, but the hospital worker did something Reuben Foster didn't like, apparently, and there was a heated exchange, and he was asked to leave from the combine, and he did. And he apologized on Instagram the next day.
I mean, what a bonehead thing. I mean, this is the sort of situation where it's kind of like when you see somebody's like online dating profile. You know, you're not actually looking at them. You're looking at the theoretical best possible version of him. And if this is the theoretical best behaved version of this guy, what's it going to look like when he's got some money in his pocket and, you know, a little bit of fame? My goodness, what a mess he is.
He did utter those words that no doubt strike fear into the dread of any NFL team when he said to the hospital worker, "Don't you know who I am?"
Oh, man. Yeah, so that part to me was definitely really funny. I'm very interested in the Brandon Marshall news. I think he's still a terrific player. I'm really curious to see where he'll end up. Wouldn't mind seeing him come to a contender up here in the Pacific Northwest. I also would note that, Neil, I think your team is losing all of its wide receivers, something along those lines. So what do you think? Would you have a home for him? Do you have a place you'd like to see Brandon Marshall end up?
No, Washington's gone down the line of trying to rebuild the roster with younger players. I think they'll continue to do that. I was surprised, Justin, that he was the leader in receptions and yards over the last decade.
I'm just surprised he was able to do it with the quarterbacks that he's had. The best quarterback he has ever had has been Jay Cutler. Like, think about that for a minute. He's been the number one receiver over the last 10 years, if you take that whole period. And his best quarterback has been Jay Cutler. My goodness. What about you, Kevin? Can you think of any place you'd like to see him?
I'd throw you a Geno Smith in there.
Oh, please don't.
The man did record a perfect passer rating one fateful game. Let's not disrespect Geno. No, we can disrespect Geno. Brandon Marshall, I mean, I think any team in the NFL would love to have him. So I would say the only teams that aren't in the running are the Jets, really. The Cowboys, I mean, he's going to – I don't even know what he would go for. What do you guys think he would – go for on the open market per year? Like, I don't even think he would go for that much. He's pretty old. He's sort of injury prone these last 2 years in New York. I think any team would love to have him. The Cowboys, I mean, if the Cowboys would sign him for a 1 year, 2 year deal for $15 million, $20 million, oh my goodness. I would love such a thing, but that's not going to happen. But I think any team would love to have Brandon Marshall.
Has he only been at Chicago and the Jets? Is that his two teams, or has he played somewhere
Miami
else?
Miami. Well.
Miami, Denver. Oh, Miami. He's been around.
Denver. Gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Kyle Not Orton. To be confused with the other Brandon Marshall in Denver.
I guess he wants to go to a contender, does he? So who of the contenders would you think would be open to him? Kansas City?
Chiefs would take him. I mean, I think I don't think it would be actually the Chiefs' style if he's especially going to be a little bit pricey. We also don't have a ton of cap room. You know, like looking at it right now, we have $9.6 million in cap room. And I think there's some guys that are going to get cut, but still, I would be surprised if they did it, just because, again, I think Dorsey is a very draft-and-developed sort of guy, but I think he'd be a great fit for just the style of the Chiefs' passing offense, where it's really, obviously, we're not taking a whole lot of shots deep downfield. We're really trying just to move the chains, and that's what Brandon Marshall is perfect for, a big-bodied possession guy who can just, you know, you'll go 10 yards down and catch anything you throw his way. So I'd love to see it happen. Don't think it lands with the Chiefs. In some ways, I mean, and I hate to say it, it just sort of feels like the kind of guy that's going to end up on a 1 to 2 year deal with the Patriots. there was another report I saw that the Patriots did offer their first round pick in a trade for Saints receiver Brandon Cooks. So they're clearly in the market for adding on some wide receiver help, and they do need it. But yeah, I mean, you look at Edelman and Marshall, you know, another year in Patriots uniforms. It's not a pleasant thought, but it's one that makes sense, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's I think that's one of the, anytime you see a high profile free agent, especially wide receiver, come up, a lot of people link him towards the Patriots. That would definitely be interesting. He would be clearly unlike the guys that they have on there. The only thing is, you know, he does a lot of media stuff. He does, you know, inside the NFL, things like that. I'm just not sure that would jive with kind of the Bill Belichick way of doing things. For me, you know, I hear he's available, and I kind of alluded to this. I would love to see him come to Seattle. He's the sort of wide receiver that the Seahawks don't have, which is the big body type. You know, it's all small, fast, like quick twitch guys. And if you have to go back a little while to early in the Pete Carroll administration, but before he went to Miami, actually, they tried really, really hard to sign him when he was a free agent at that juncture. They really like him, his personality, which a lot of other teams don't necessarily like his personality, but he would be middle of the pack here for that sort of thing. So I'm curious to see if there's going to be any movement that way as far as these go. And as far as Brandon Cooks go, I am shocked. Am I crazy thinking that I wouldn't give up a first round pick for him, and the Saints are turning down a first round pick?
No, they turned down the pick from the Patriots, but that wasn't the only pick involved, I believe. I think there was also some Saints picks involved there too, so it wasn't just Cooks for the first round pick of the Patriots. But I'm with you, Justin. I would maybe give you a second for him, but I mean, there are rumors coming out that he's got an attitude problem. Those could just be coming from the Saints trying to discredit him a little bit. Who knows? But a bit of attitude problem when he doesn't get the ball often enough.
I think he's worth a first. I mean, a late first. If you're a team, particularly picking the second half of the round, and you need a wide receiver. I mean, he was a first round pick anyway, right? I mean, yeah, he was 20th overall.
Yeah, he was like a 26th overall pick, something like that.
Yeah, 20th overall in 2014. And look, I mean, he had 1,173 yards, 8 touchdowns last season. I think you got to believe he's going to have more guaranteed pedigree and more, I guess, more predictable and reliable production than if you're going to throw a first-round pick on a wide receiver in the draft. Plus, he's obviously really young. So, yeah, I mean, if your choice is one of the wide receivers that falls into the back of the first round, or Brandon Marshall, who's probably got a year or two left, or Brandon Cooks for that first, I mean, I don't know. I think he's probably the best wide receiver available right now.
He has got 215 career receptions with the Saints. That's in 3 seasons. And last 2 years, he's been over 1,000 yards.
My only thing with him is, do I think he's worth more now than when he was drafted? That's kind of what it comes down to. And at least, you know, when he was drafted, you thought he could be potentially a superstar. He might be a bust, but you thought he at least had that superstar potential. And you had a very, very controlled price point for, 4 or 5 years, depending on how the option works out. Now you're getting him, you know he's not a star. You do know he is a starting NFL wide receiver. But you have, 1 year of price control on him? So, to me, his value is clearly less than it was when you drafted him. So, yeah, I think a second would be reasonable for him. I think he's a good player. I just have a hard time, you know, giving up a ton to go get this guy.
The Saints actually traded up to get him. They traded up from the 27th spot in the 2014 draft gave up their first and the third round picks to Arizona to get Arizona's 20th selection. So
yeah, now they're trying to move them. So what does that tell you?
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to the heart of the matter. We're talking combine. We're talking Underwear Olympics. We're talking about all these college kids get gathered up and get poked and prodded and paraded out like a bunch of meat, which I think explains why Neil and Kevin have been so locked into it this whole time. So, Kevin, let's start with you. What stood out to you so far? Who's impressed you? Who's depressed you? What have you been really, really locked into at this combine?
I mean, we were briefly discussing before we came on to Myles Garrett. Obviously looked like a freak, a 41-inch vertical. He looks by far and away the best player in the entire draft, as everyone thought he was, so no surprise there. But he just looks amazing. He's athleticism, he's just his lateral quickness, he's everything about him. There's nothing to really say about him besides the Browns should take him number one. It's a defensive laden draft. I think a lot of people know that, but the next thing that really impressed me was the depth of tight end in this draft. Maybe I'm enamored by the 40 times they all ran, that someone who doesn't scout someone 24/7, that's obviously one of the first things that stands out to me, that these tight ends can move and they can fly down the seam and they can prevent a lot of mismatches. So that's what really stands out to me, is the tight ends. The running backs, they didn't really not impress me, but they were just sort of status quo, I guess. What I expected, no really wow factor. Christian McCaffrey sort of actually impressed me more than I thought he did. His hands are really good. He runs really crisp routes. I think he can probably, besides Leonard Fournette, be the best back in this draft. So I'll hand it over to Neil now. See what he thinks about the Underwear Olympics 2017 version.
Where do you want me to start, Justin? I could start with the quarterbacks, if you like.
Ooh, that could be a fun spot. Yeah, let's go right there.
I think everybody was very keen to see Mitchell Trubisky, as we have to call him now. And he's put himself front and center in the Trevor heading there for me. If he's going to be calling himself Mitchell, that's not a great name for me. He's already a bust. He performed okay. I mean, he came in at 6'2". That was a query, I think, for a lot of guys coming in. Is he going to actually make 6'2"? He was always listed at 6'3", but some thought he was more like 6'1". So he's okay height-wise. He looked... I think you've got to look at all these quarterbacks, Justin, and say none of them look like day-one starters. I don't think we're seeing a Carson Wentz in here. They're more Jared Goff than Carson Wentz. Pat Mahomes, who received a lot of buzz before this, he looked... Yeah, he... He looked very, very average. His ball wasn't great coming out of his hands. I think the guy in the quarterbacks who looked the best was actually Deshaun Watson, the Clemson Tigers quarterback. He looked smooth. He looked good, very crisp in his passes. He had a lot of zip on his passes. But, of course, with no pass rush coming directly at them, you didn't get a chance to see his eye-watering interceptions as we saw pretty much through most of last season. He's a guy who comes in, and if his first read is covered, then he starts crapping kittens, Justin, and just looks all over the place and ends up throwing interceptions or taking bad sacks. So, yeah, so from the quarterbacks, nobody really that great. I like Nathan Peterman. I think we'll be talking about that over the next few weeks. He looked good. He looked strong. Maybe not as quite as much zip on his passes as some of the other guys, but certainly very good in terms of his accuracy. And I think you can work on arm strength, but you very difficult to work on accuracy, you know?
So let me ask you this then. When you're looking at the quarterbacks in the combine, I think more than any other position, this is an area where athleticism isn't necessarily the most important skill. Not to suggest that Tom Brady isn't clearly an elite athlete. He's basically a thoroughbred out there. But, you know, there's so many things in that position that's more, you know, mental, things like that. So what are you looking for? What would a quarterback do at the combine that would sort of move them up your mental draft chart?
Oh, certainly fluidity. I want to see quarterbacks who most of them start as if they're under center and taking a snap. And then they drop back. You want to see that fluid movement. You want to see nice footwork. And then you want to see timing patterns with wide receivers who they really don't know. And you notice some of the quarterbacks, before the drill started, they said, hey, wide receiver, come and let's just throw a few passes. And I want to see that mental, I want to see that mental awareness to see what they can do to make themselves look better during the drills. When you watch their passes, I don't want to see these balls that are sort of arcing and slow, and you can imagine Richard Sherman just jumping the route and picking it off. You want to see zip on the passes, and you want to see them throwing the passes into the receiver so he can run onto the ball, as opposed to having to hold up or to pull back.
So, Nick, let me throw this over to you. Kevin was talking a little bit about some of the running backs. Your team is sort of pushing out a really, really good running back in Jamaal Charles. Do you look at any of these guys, obviously maybe not a Leonard Fournette, but like a Christian McCaffrey or something like that, and see a potential replacement for him? Are you just going to stand pat with the Spencer Wares of the world? What are you looking at when you're watching the Combine right now?
Well, I think Chiefs fans are looking at both of those groups, actually, looking at the running backs and the quarterbacks. It does seem like, and who knows, I mean, we are in the age and the era and the section of the calendar of smoke screens, but it just seems like the writing is on the wall with the Chiefs that they're going to pick a quarterback high this year. It's because it's the first year where there's a lot of stability at all the other position groups. Are pretty deep everywhere. And even Alex Smith himself, like when asked about it after the playoff loss and a couple weeks later, like he said, like, yeah, no, I think the Chiefs, even he said the Chiefs should pick a quarterback high. Yeah, it was like, oh, you got to get more of them. And I think that was part of the result of some conversation he had with the general management. It was like, hey, look, you're still our guy for next year, but we are going to be looking at, you know, the future at the position. So, so I don't know. It's really interesting. I'm not sure how much you can glean from the combine from these guys. I mean, as Neil was just going through there are some things you can pick up on, but the fact is they're throwing to receivers they haven't thrown to before. They're just like random guys from that are there to be participating as wide receivers, and they're throwing against air, and you don't know how well they can just sort of guess timing with a guy they've never thrown to before. But It's interesting to see. I'm glad they all threw, and there are no giant red flags, which is really all you're really looking for at this stage. For the running backs, it was an interesting group. A few guys didn't do well. Cook is a guy that a lot of Chiefs fans have their eye on, as he just somehow he has some of those Jamaal Charles attributes, and I think that's therefore what Chiefs fans are naturally sort of looking for, at least on tape. He has good vision. He moves around, but he did really bad at the combine. His cone drill, I don't remember the number, but he did really poorly at that, which is really not what you're looking for from a running back that's supposed to be elusive and have that cut ability. But to me, it's again, like I am a bit of a combine skeptic. I think it's fun for us as fans. It gives us something to look at and talk about during this dead stretch of the season. But the reality is that the scouts and the teams are all making their decisions on guys based on the film. And so, I mean, I think the combine matters about as much as the presidential debates did this past election. There's nobody who doesn't know what they already think of these guys before they go into it. It's just sort of like, jot down a few more notes of things we like or don't like about the person we already like or don't like. So that's sort of what I think there. You brought up McCaffrey, and I actually think he's been sort of, things have been quiet with him for a while, and I think he might be end up being the best back in this group. I have my doubts about Fournette. So, I don't know, there's something about him that seems very Darren McFadden-y to me. McCaffrey just seems like the guy for the modern NFL for 2017, with how well he catches the ball, with his vision, with how good his change of direction is. He just seems like a guy that you can use in a number of different ways in the offense, and I think every offense needs that these days. You need to have a guy who, when he lines up behind you, in that formation, it's not like, okay, they're handing it off to him, or it's going to be run up the middle. I mean, or, maybe pass pro, but like that, those are the only options with like Fournette practically. He's not a great catcher of the ball. And I think that's something that you've seen teams that have gotten a little one-dimensional, at least a little predictable with their offenses, they've really struggled with. I'm kind of rambling here, but I'm interested to get Kevin's thoughts, because Kevin, obviously, the Cowboys have had they've now done what I think anybody who's thinking about drafting Fournette wants to do, and that they got Ezekiel Elliott and they got the power running game going. It was just a massive success. But I think Zeke and his success last year was by far the exception rather than the rule. I mean, none of the teams that are going to be in the range to draft Fournette are going to have that offensive line that can impose its will, that are going to have a good enough passing game where it's going to do enough, it's not going to make mistakes, and you can just grind out these games. I mean, I think, I don't know, this is a long roundabout way of saying that I have questions about Fournette, and I think McCafferty could end up being the top guy here.
No, I definitely agree with you. I mean, let me just first address the Cowboys. I mean, you're right. Ezekiel pretty much went into a perfect situation. I mean, the Cowboys, everyone criticizes them, and most of that criticism is about the defense. I mean, as a running back, it's you going to that offensive line, going to that team who has pass catchers all over the field. There's weapons all over the place. You're not. If teams want to treat you as the only weapon, you're going to get scorched throughout. So Zeke pretty much went to a perfect situation. So in that respect, you can't really expect Leonard Fournette to match what Zeke did. That would be very unfair expectations for him. But I do agree with you. McCaffrey may be the best. I said it earlier, he may be second best to Leonard Fournette, but I really only said that just because I didn't want to upset anyone and say Leonard Fournette wasn't going to be the best. And just because he's so widely considered to be the best, it sort of just accepted it. But his 28.5-inch vert, I know it probably means nothing, but it's a little embarrassing, at least coming from my angle. He is 240. He's a big dude, but it's a little embarrassing. Other two running backs, though, I want to talk about that I failed to mention before. One is Joe Williams, the back from Utah. He has some off-the-field concerns. He did retire for 1 month this season, so people, rightfully so, should be questioning his commitment to the game. But he says it was for health reasons, not his love of football. But Joe Williams he's a great player. He's super quick. I think he ran a sub 4.45. All the scouts say he has phenomenal vision, phenomenal lateral quickness. He can catch the ball. Pretty much the only negative thing the scouts say about Joe is his off-the-field problems with some substances and his questioning the commitment of the game. But I think if he goes to the right situation, maybe the Patriots in the third round or so, I think that'd be a great pick for the Patriots. I think he could do some damage. And speaking of Jamal Charles, the next Jamal Charles in KC, I think Alvin Kamara, the back from Tennessee, he might not be the next Jamal Charles, but I think he could be something similar. He's great catching the ball out of the backfield. He had 23 touchdowns and under 285 touches at Tennessee. So he's obviously explosive, quick twitch athlete like Jamal Charles, who, as everyone knows, is the all-time leader in yards per carry. So I think, again, saying he's going to be the next Jamal Charles is putting unfair pressure on the man. But Alvin Kamara, I think, has what it takes to be an effective back in this league. But I don't think anyone should be expected to duplicate or even come close to duplicating Zeke's effort from last year. Neil, I know this is a big defensive draft, and much like the Cowboys, the Redskins need some pass rushing and defensive line help. How do you feel? I just want to ask you about Montrevious Adams, the guy from Auburn. He sort of flashed to me in the combine, but I had read some like questioning reviews about his gameplay and stuff. But I like what I saw in the combine, but I just want to see what you have to say about the man who ran a 4.88 as a 315-pounder, which is just honestly unbelievable.
Yeah, can I go back to the running back chat? You guys are absolutely out of your minds if you think McCaffrey is anywhere close to being a better running back than Leonard Fournette. If Fournette goes to the right system, and I'm thinking of the Carolina Panthers, for as an example, which he's been mocked to there quite a bit. I think he's got a chance to go better than Elliott did last season. This guy is, I think he'll get down to about 230 for his playing weight. Not sure what the heck he was doing at 240 for this combine. But if he gets down to 230 and he's running at 4.45 in the 40-yard dash, The guy's special. He's not as great a player as Myles Garrett is as on the other side of the ball, but he, for me, is the second best player in this draft. And yeah, McCaffrey, very good, but he's not a between the tackles guy. He's going to be a third down back, and I think a really good third down back, but a third down back with the ability to play in the slot, absolutely. But no, not in the same class as Fournette. And I have to say, Dalvin Cook and your man there, Alvin Kamara, and Kamara, who I like, both disappointed. And Kamara's 40 time, 4.456. I thought he would go. I thought he would go sort of 4.448, 4.45. But yeah, poor showing from him. So I think they dropped a little bit. The guy who perhaps has jumped the highest out of all the running backs is probably Joe Mixon, who isn't here. Just as in terms of his ability on the field, his pro day is going to be great to see that, and he might turn out to be the second best running back in this group. So, Kevin, in terms of Montrevious Adams, I like him a lot, and like you say, he ran a really quick 40 time. I watched him in some of the drills. He did look a bit sort of stiff in his lower limbs, trying to move. Laterally, you know, but there are question marks, I think, with him over his how can I put this delicately, how clever he is in terms of picking up defensive plays and learning the sport. I think that's the issue with him, but physically he looks terrific, doesn't he?
Oh yeah.
So let's turn our attention over to the defensive side of the ball then. In particular, I want to turn our attention to the defensive side of the ball. I'm really interested in Jabril Peppers. He's kind of that tweener player, doesn't necessarily have a perfect home. Sort of played a little bit out of position in college. There's some talk that he's going to be a safety, some talk that he's going to be a linebacker, maybe some hybrid of the two, but he was really impressive today as well. What can you tell me about him, Kevin?
I think he's definitely going to be a safety. When I was watching him or tuning in and out of the combine today, Mayock was saying that he's not sure why he's working out at linebackers. He should definitely be a safety. I mean, I think he's under 6 feet. I think he's 5'11" and whatever eights they want to call him. But he's definitely got the body for a safety. But he looks quick. He ran a 4.46 40, and they put up a 40 of him running and a flashback of Earl Thomas, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, and some other safety who I'm forgetting at the moment, but it was just cool. And he had the best 40 time out of all of them. Not to say he's going to be them, but he has the potential to be the next Earl Thomas, I think. He's very rangy. He's a playmaker. He can even play special teams. I think he returned punts at Michigan. He just looked really good. And then at the end of the combine, he had a little mini interview with Mayock and Rich Eisen, and he seems like an intelligent guy. It seems like he loves the sport of football, like he's excited to play, which is always invaluable. So I think Peppers is going to be a top five player in this draft class when we look back at it for however many years from now. I really do.
Yeah, I think safety makes sense for him as well. And yeah, his numbers are great. He's an awesome athlete. I think he's the sort of player who, no matter where you put him, is going to do really, really well. So he's kind of a pretty clear one. What about you, Neil, on the defensive side of the ball? Who's impressed you? Who's either improved their draft stock or sort of solidified their status outside of the couple of guys we've already talked about?
Well, I think you have to look. I mean, obviously, yeah, Peppers, terrific. The other guy you've got to look at is Hassan Reddick, who is actually, I think, will be end up being a linebacker in this league. And I think he's from Temple, isn't he, Reddick? He was working out with a defensive lineman, so looked extra special, just like Peppers did when he was working out with the linebackers. But Reddick is shooting up draft boards, I would think. He looks fast. He looks capable as an outside linebacker. He could probably play inside linebacker too. He looks to me like one of those linebackers the Steelers pick up, sort of slightly undersized, but quick to the ball, hits hard, and yeah, looks quick. Looks really, really fluid in his movement. And when he's doing the drills, he's just shooting right through those drills. Yeah. You see some guys doing the drills and they they're squatting down and they're crawling to the, getting up to their feet and they're hitting cones and all the rest of it. Some of them look pretty ropey at that, but he had that natural movement and lateral skills which you want to see from your linebackers. So he's a guy that really impressed. And of course, you've talked about Myles Garrett. You watch all these guys at the doing all the drills on the defensive side of the ball, and then along comes Myles Garrett, and he's doing something completely different from the rest of those guys. He's playing his own little game in his own little stadium, where the rest of the guys toil away doing the drills. The guy is special, and hey, Cleveland are the only team I think who could possibly browns this up and not select Myles Garrett number one. They've got to take him.
You know who I think Neil could also be? I don't know where his draft stock is now, but I imagine somewhere in the fifth round or something. The UCLA defensive tackle Eddie Vandernorst. He looked like he has a lot of potential, a lot of athletic ability, and he ran a sub 5.40, and he's 6'3", 320. I mean, that to me is just like what's going on? How is that even possible? He has injury problems, but he looks like he could really tear this place up.
There's going to be so many guys from this draft. You can probably get starting linemen in the third, fourth round from this draft. A guy I liked a lot is Tano Passagnon from Villanova. He's 6'7". He's 290 pounds. And he just looks he looks special. He ran, I think, about a 4.8, 4.83 in the 40 for a guy that size. It was phenomenal. He looked okay in the tests. But if you go and look at some of his highlight reel, and you'll see a guy who can just dominate, probably from, well, he's going to be a 5 technique, I would guess, when he gets into the NFL. The guy, Justin, who may be disappointed, was the big name at defensive tackle, and that was Jonathan Allen from Alabama. I didn't think he looked quite as good as advertised. He also came in a little bit lighter than I thought he would. Maybe he's dropped a bit of weight just for the combine, I'm not sure. But he didn't look so good. And then there was a medical question with him, having mild arthritis in both shoulders, which he's saying is not going to affect his NFL career. But arthritis in the shoulders, regardless of how mild, I think will put some teams off. He may drop a little bit in the draft. But yeah, Passagnon, he's my guy. And I'm going to slaughter that name from now till the draft.
Yeah, until you hear it mentioned 800 times. So, let me ask you, a guy I'm kind of interested in is Solomon Thomas. He's a big man, huge wingspan, but he is strong as all get out. He had a 126-inch broad jump, which is huge. You know, for me, and you know, I was upfront, I don't follow the combine as closely as you do, but pretty much anybody who plays outside the perimeter, I like to look at their three cone drill. You know, your ability to be explosive and change direction. And at 6.95 seconds at a player of his size, I wish I could pull up his actual height and weight, because he's a big, big man. He's like 270. Oh, that's impressive. Yeah,
I was really disappointed with him. I wonder where he's going to play in the league, Justin. He's 6'3", 273 pounds. I don't know. Where does he play? Where does he play in the NFL that size? I think he's too big to play outside linebacker. I think he's too small to play really on the interior. Is he going to be a defensive end? Is he going to be a 5 technique? I don't know. There's a lot of buzz about him. Folk love him, but I just thought he looked a bit like a guy.
Yeah, you know what, though?
Quick, mind you.
He's the kind of player that, you know, maybe a few years ago, would be really, really hard to place. But in today's NFL, I mean, so like his height and weight are almost identical to Michael Bennett, right? And Michael Bennett's that same thing. He's kind of a tweener. He's not really as big as an inside guy. And so, but what you do is you play him on the outside on rundowns, then you bump him inside on passing downs. And he's that kind of hybrid player. And, you know, Michael Bennett, who in my opinion is one of the best defensive linemen in the league, was undrafted because of that. You know, because he was that kind of tweener type guy. So I think that Solomon fits that build. You know, I don't think being a tweener is a bad thing anymore. I think that versatility is a good thing. It's something that, you know, is desirable. So I really hope that people don't kind of knock him down because, you know, he's not perfect for every play at outside linebacker or every play at end or every play at a tackle. You know, as long as you move him around and line him up in the right place, I think a guy with that kind of build could be really, really valuable. I mean, what do you think, Nick? Am I crazy? Do we all need specialists everywhere? Like, what do you think?
Well, I think it depends on scheme, but I do think that we are seeing more and more of these hybrid players between two different positions. And because I just think deception is just becoming a bigger and bigger part of offenses and defenses. I think you look at particularly like the safety corner mixes like the Honey Badger and the safety linebacker mixes like Sua Cravens, who just had a great rookie season in Washington. And the idea that you can use a guy in both spots and as a pick, you know, and when you can create defensive alignments where the quarterback doesn't necessarily know what position they're playing, and that's like that's the best thing you can possibly have in terms of masking a coverage or a blitz, and just the fact is that it's a bit of an arms race on the offense as well, because you have so many offensive players that are effectively tweeners. You know, the rise of the tight end position, where you have big guys that are also fast and can box out and have great hands, all that kind of stuff, requires you to have fast linebackers and guys that can match up with those particular weapons that are just mismatches. I mean, I think the rise of the tweeners is something that's here to stay, and you know, and we might see, you know, more and more of it actually.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly where I'm at. So, any other players on the defensive side of the ball that any of you guys want to highlight?
If I could just mention, just to give him a shout out on this podcast, he probably won't get drafted at all, I don't think. His name's Dylan Donahue from West Georgia. He's going to be an outside linebacker in the league, but when he was doing one of the shuttle drills, the poor guy kept getting called out by the coach who he kept doing the drill wrong. And I think he tried three attempts at it and did it the wrong three times and was sort of told to get lost, son. And right at the very end of that drill, he kind of came back in for one final go at it, and he did it, and everybody was kind of like, yeah, fantastic, well done, man. And great shout out, great to come in there and get over his nerves and perform the drill, and he did it well. So good luck to him. I'll be keeping an eye on him in the future. The other thing, Justin, with the defensive players, tomorrow, of course, we have the great safety and cornerback class doing their drills, and that's going to be, well, if you've missed the combine up to this point, well, you've got the best part coming up tomorrow, because it's without doubt the most talented group of players available in this year's draft. It could be 10 to 12 top two-round picks there coming up tomorrow, so that's great to look out for. Jamal Adams, Lattimore, Hooker, all these guys could be fantastic. Should be.
Okay, so I've kind of saved this for sort of its own section. I want to talk about 40s. Not the beverages. I want to talk about 40 times in the combine.
I want to talk about those 40s.
Yeah.
that's a different show. So, you know, this is probably the event that by far the most people pay attention to, that the most people tune into. And the one event where results are pretty, you know, consumed by and large. And this year was a pretty special one. We actually had the all-time record, official record, broken by John Ross out of the University of Washington. He ran a 4.22, which, rumor has it, is incredibly, incredibly fast. So, first off, congratulations to him for being that fast. Neil, what do you think of John Ross?
Well, with his 40-yard dash, I blinked and I missed it, Justin. It was that fast. Let's be clear here. A lot of guys come to the combine and they run really, really fast. Obviously not as fast as John Ross. But a lot of those guys, they can't catch the ball or they can't run with the ball, whatever. This guy is a wide receiver. He can catch the ball. He's got excellent tape at Baylor catching the ball. So don't just see this guy as a speed guy. He's a proper receiver. What a run, Justin, to break the record. That's stood since what? When would that have been? Early 2000s? That Johnson?
Chris Johnson in 2008.
2008. So there you go. It's been going for, what, 7 years? That's terrific for the guy. Is it going to help him in the draft? I'm not sure it will do, because everybody knows he was blazing fast anyway. He looked good catching the ball as well. At Baylor, he didn't do any more really in the combine because his one problem that may haunt him in his career came up. He got injured. He had problems with his calves. He's had injuries throughout his career at Baylor, and I believe he's going to have shoulder surgery after the combine. So that's not great. He's got a small frame, but hey, if I'm a team looking for a wide receiver and I'm seeing the potential next DeSean Jackson coming in this draft, I don't see him getting out of the top 15 picks.
So 40 to me is interesting. I mean, you look at obviously he just put up a great number. Chris Johnson held the record. And Chris Johnson, early in his career, before some injuries, was a terrific football player, running for 2,000 yards in 2009. But, you know, when I go down the list of the best 40 times of all time, it's fairly unimpressive, the actual players, right?
Yeah.
You know, we have Dree Archer, Marquise Goodwin, so I'm following Chris Johnson, Jacoby Ford. You're going to find a couple of Raiders on here, naturally. DeMarcus Van Dyke, another Raider. J.J. Nelson, who had an okay second year. All right. Yaman Figgers. Does anybody know who Yaman
Baltimore
Figgers is?
Raven. Baltimore, yeah. Former Raven.
Mm-hmm.
Darius Heyward-Bey, another Raider. Ty Hill. Tyvon Branch. Jonathan Joseph, who's a okay football player. Justin King. Keith Marshall. So I go down this list. Trey Waynes. This is not a who's who of the elite talent in the NFL.
Keith Marshall is still with Washington.
Well, at least he's got that going for him. So yeah. He must be doing something right. So, you know, 40 time, which kind of captures everybody's imagination, doesn't seem to be predictive at all of NFL success. It's one of those things where I almost wonder if there's even a point to do it. I mean, you look at these players who, for the most part, are a bunch of nobodies, but they ran, you know, this one exercise really quick. And, you know, everybody's heard kind of that tired argument 1,000 times that, you know, the players are training for the events in the combine right now, not for the NFL. That there's a big difference between, like, on the field fast and, you know, 40 fast, but they're all true. I mean, that's why these arguments are made. So
yeah, but
you know.
Justin, remember, this is the guys the Browns should be drafting, because one thing you can do with blazing wide receiver speed is you can chase down all those Robert Griffin III interceptions.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, a lot of these players, they don't look nearly as fast on the field. I mean, you know, if you're 0.02 seconds faster in the combine, what does that mean? You know, when you're running 40 yards down the field to catch the ball, you know, the safety takes an extra step back at the start of the play. I mean, you know, again, call me a combine skeptic. I mean, I look at a lot of these numbers, and you look at a lot of the record holders, and many of them are not great NFL players. So how important are these numbers? Like, should we care? Do we pay attention?
I somewhat agree with you as well, Justin and Nick. I mean, these numbers aren't the be-all, end-all. Clearly, they aren't indicative of future success. It's not black and white like that. But in terms of players, it can either, like, for example, this year, Raekwon McMillan, like, I think his 40 time of 4.61, That was a lot better than people expected. I think people didn't expect him to show as much lateral quickness and speed as he did today. So for players like him, I think the combine is very useful, because I think Raekwon McMillan is going to be a pretty good linebacker. And his stock sort of went up today, in my opinion, because of how well he performed in some of the drills. But obviously, you read the list there. People like Marquise Goodwin, he's going to run a fast 40 time, but he's not a good football player. He's a track star. So, yeah, that's going to happen. But a lot of the defensive drills that obviously don't get the recognition, that don't have times, no one cares about those. But those are, like, the ones that translate most to the NFL. But no one really has the time to watch those unless you're a scout, and me, because I did watch some of those, but I don't, you know, it's Sunday, I'm already fiending football, so I decided to. But, I mean, you have to take it with a grain of salt. It means something, but it doesn't mean all that much, but it definitely means something. You can definitely weed out the numbskulls like, I guess, Reuben Foster. Not a good first impression. But Jabril Peppers, I think he stood out a lot, and he was already considered one of the good players in this draft, but I think he even stood out among the standout players, and I think you can spot the who's going to be really great. But, like, again, I'm not going to go on. I've said it three times now. Take it with a grain of salt, but it does mean something.
But I just think even, like, even using the 40 to try to differentiate players and things like that. I mean, when we were talking about the running backs, we mentioned that, you know, Kamara sort of disappointed with his 4.56. Well, Fournette had a 4.51. I think Cook had a 4.48, 4.49. So literally what we're talking about is the difference from top to bottom of those guys of 700th of a second, which is faster than to be capped. Like, that's less than like one camera shutter to the next. I mean, most cameras are shooting at 25 to 30 frames per second. So we're talking about something you can't blink that fast. You can't, like, it is like an imperceptibly small difference in terms of 40 times between those guys. However, it is a different number, and so therefore we can talk about, oh, well, this is a point in this guy's favor, a point in that guy's favor, but they effectively all ran the same speed. It's also measuring a situation in football that never actually happens. I mean, it's almost never are you going to have a guy who's starting from 0 to 40 yards in a straight line. It happens only on, like, go routes and a few other things. So, I mean, that is the one thing with John Ross.
Most people look at the 10-yard split as the more important part of the 40-yard dash. But, I mean, America, they just like to sell numbers, and 40-yard dash is the easiest thing to sell because it's the easiest thing to watch and to put a number on, obviously. So that's just what we are as a society. But you're right, the 40-yard dash really doesn't mean all that much. It's just fun to see how fast people run. But other drills do have some translatability, even though that's not a word. But transferability, I guess, would be the proper word.
You made a distinction there, Kevin, though, which I think is very apt, and that is between, like, the defensive linemen and linebackers and safeties who I think the 40-yard dash is important to, because I think that additional speed does translate onto the field, whereas with the wide receivers, and I think you ran through a whole list of a rogues gallery of failed wide receivers there, Justin, in your list. And that's why I kind of said about John Ross that he is a good receiver. The guy can catch the ball. He has good numbers. He's a good receiver. But that speed for a good receiver, like a DeSean Jackson, can open up the field for so many other players on the field. So I think it's important for them, but not as important as it is for the defensive players who can show that extra bit of speed, which will take somebody like Raekwon McMillan into the first round when he was probably a second rounder, because he has that versatility and that extra bit of pace, which defensive coaches just love. I mean, have a look at your guy at Seattle there, and Earl Thomas. His speed and his ability to get across the field is what's one of the reasons he's probably going to end up being a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah, but that's also kind of my point. I mean, his ability to close has as much to do with his mental ability as it does with his straight line speed. I mean, his straight line speed is really, really good, but it's not incredible. It just looks that way on the field because it's recognition. And you know, that's just kind of fundamentally sort of what I'm looking at is, you know, you say some of these guys, oh, you know, their lateral quickness is much bigger than everybody expected. Well, that's because when they're playing actual football, they don't move that quickly laterally. It's just when they're, you know, in their little, track spikes with their little shorty shorts on, they've been working on that drill specifically. They do, but you put them back on a football field, I think they're the same players they were in college on tape.
Yeah, but if you have a player who makes mental errors or doesn't read the play quick enough, he has that cover speed to make up that lost time. That's also a skill, a talent.
Yeah, I suppose, or you end up with a Aaron Curry, like we did, who has all the physical ability in the world but can't make
Aaron Curry. Oh my God, what a throwback!
Oh. And hey, a Seahawks super fan, what do you expect?
Was he Vanderbilt too, like Zach Cunningham? Oh man,
Wake
not good
Forest,
for Zach Cunningham. Oh yeah, Wake Forest.
Yeah, that was supposed to be like an all-time great like defensive class coming out of Wake Forest. Boy, were they wrong about that.
Kevin, Zach Cunningham looks far better in the combine than he does on tape.
Zach Cunningham is so skinny. I don't like how skinny he looks. He looks like he can be blown over by a strong wind.
Yep.
I like him, though. I got a jersey waiting for him.
Oh.
But I just want to name a few more defensive players who I really became enamored with. This guy, I'm definitely going to butcher his name, Larry Ogbojani. Rawer version of Sheldon Rankins. He comes from a small school. I'm forgetting the school at the moment. It's like North Carolina State or something. But he's only been playing football since sophomore year of high school, but he is explosive as can be, even though we just sort of mocked out and you can't really judge that. But and then last player I want to bring up, who I think the Cowboys should draft in the 7th round, because I don't imagine he's going to be high on many draft boards, Denzel Smart, defensive tackle from Tulane. He looked pretty quick. He ran a pretty quick 40 for a man his size, let me tell you. And everyone says everything that I quickly Googled about him. He loves the game of football. Every snap plays like it's his last. Sounds like a perfect Rod Marinelli guy. So, Rod Marinelli, when you listen to this, you can thank me when he records his first sack week one.
Okay. Any last thoughts from you, Neil?
Just that in terms of the wide receivers we saw on show, it was disappointing, obviously, not to see Corey Davis and Mike Williams.
And what about you, Nick? Last thoughts from you.
My final thought is I've just been starting to dig into the tape, and it's my turn, Neil. And I'll just say, I don't watch much college, and the thing I learned most from watching tape of guys like Fournette is just how bad the defensive backfield tackling is in the college level.
All right, Neil, you sound like you had more to say.
I just want to say another wide receiver, that was KD Cannon. I thought he looked exceptionally fluid and quick in his drills. Liked him a lot. He probably won't.